All right, James, we are into 2024 on the pod. First pod of the year. Exciting.
Man, that was a break, Jonas. I looked it up. There's been 7 games since we last did a podcast, so we've got some catching up to do here.
We do. There's actually, honestly, a ton to talk about. Like, we haven't talked since Ilya Samsonov was placed on waivers. We obviously haven't talked since, you know, the All-Star game stuff just happened. What else has happened? There was some not the so Sabres great game. Losses. Yeah, we haven't talked since then.
9 goals against.
Yeah. There was that. And you look like, as we stand today, the Leafs are sitting 3rd in the division. Obviously, they've got some games in hand. But it's like it's been a little bit of a rocky patch. We'll talk about Martin Jones. That's been one of the highlights. I think we should start with the All-Star game stuff. Are you okay with that? Just because that's the most... what's the word? Recent?
Sure.
That's the right word.
Lead the way, Jonas. I am... I'm your humble servant here.
Okay. And we will get to Samsonov. We will get to Jones. We'll talk about the games in California so far for the Leafs. But let's start with the All-Star stuff. Auston Matthews named the Leafs representative. The league still chooses to pick one player from every team. It's not a surprise that Auston Matthews was their pick for the first pick from the team. And then 12 players will be voted in by the fans. I wrote a column. I don't know if it was a column. I wrote a story saying that William Nylander should have been the first pick for the Leafs. Auston Matthews isn't the wrong pick. You know, he's got 30 goals in 35 games. Every year he's been eligible, he's been an All-Star. I just wish, James, like, I don't care that much, and I don't know how much the players care because this hasn't changed, but the All-Star game should mean more. Not the game itself, but making the team should actually mean something, and they've just watered it down in the way that they choose to name players.
I wonder if, like, part of the thinking on their part is, like, no one really cares that much, so let's just put someone in from every team.
You know, that doesn't make sense, though, right? Like,
well, they want it. They want the
random guys.
Well, they want the All-Star game to be a story in every market. They want, you know, they want to sell. If you go to the All-Star game and you're going to have a player there, no matter what market you come from. And the All-Star game, I've been to a bunch of them. It's very much like a corporate event. You know, it's the All-Star game is for kids and for the NHL to bring in corporate sponsors and do stuff like that. It's not good TV viewing. It's not good to attend as a fan, really, if you're over 7 years old. Even the skills competition. I like what they're doing with, like, they brought the draft back. It sounds like Brendan Shanahan played a part in that happening. I think that's good. Anything they can do to, and they're going to try and crown a skills competition winner. Like, everyone's going to do some events and they're going to have, like, some sort of a point system. And I think that'll add maybe a little bit of intrigue to it, but the All-Star game it's hit some new lows for me in the last few years. Like, I just haven't paid attention to it at all recently.
Yeah. I think you're missing my point a little bit. Like, I don't think you're ever going to make the event interesting, but I think you should make making the team matter in the way that it really matters in the NBA. It really matters in the NFL with the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl, I can't say bowl. It matters in baseball. It just doesn't, when you choose to do every team, you just water this thing down. Like, it matters, I think, to players to make the team. And when you're choosing guys like Boone Jenner and Tom Wilson, and it's like Oliver Bjorkstrand, like, I don't know, it just kind of takes something away from the meaning of the whole thing. And I don't know, like a player like Nylander is a really good example. Like, he's
going to not
make it this year.
You know, he'll make. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Leafs fans always lean heavily on the fan voting and he'll get in. Like, if he doesn't get in, then
last year, James, like when he was leading the team in scoring, but yeah, maybe.
Yeah. But he's right. 5th in league scoring and the game is in Toronto. And, you know, I suspect there's going to be 3 Leafs at the All-Star game, at least maybe 4, with the fan voting getting factored in. And I think Matthews is the right choice because they want him to be one of the team captains. They want him to kind of be like the home ambassador for the Leafs. The league's kind of thinking of it as like a television production. They wanted to put a Leafs person in there who's going to be doing the draft, right? Like, he's going to be picking his team. So they want to get some faces of the league to put in there.
And that's
what they were thinking with. McDavid's going to be going to be one of the people picking. Matthews will be one of the people picking. I don't know who the other two captains will be, but.
Well, so if I was designing the way to pick rosters, I would take it out of the league's hands, because I don't think, like, it's just the league's central office making these decisions. Like, I don't think that makes sense. I would do it more like the NBA, where coaches have a say, players have a say, GMs have a say, fans have a say, media have a say, and get the right people.
I think they do. I think they go to the teams and talk about who the right choice for each team would be. I think that I'm pretty sure there's some input. When I used to care about this more and I looked into how they decided this, they would talk it through with the teams about, like, who do you think your representative should be?
Yeah, that I know that still happens. I think you're right. But, like, even last year, like, Marner made it ahead of Nylander. Like, that doesn't really make sense. I can't remember if that was through voting or what. Anyway, like, I just think Nylander deserves to be there. He's, like, as you said, like, I think he's fifth or sixth in league scoring. I think he's been their most consistent player all year. Like, I don't really think that that's much of a debate. Matthews has really come on and been their best player last month. And let's talk about Matthews, because, like, this is nuts. Like, again, 30 goals in 35 games is incredible. Like, I wrote about it after the game the Leafs played in LA, where they just, like, hammered the Ducks and then finally pulled through. But, like, he has a shot at 50 goals in 50 games. Like, 20 goals in the next 15 games doesn't seem like it's a lot, but it doesn't seem like impossible for him, does it? Do you?
No, I think it's probably a long shot, because it's just hard to do that. And he's already on a heater, and he's already at a 19% shooting percentage, but he's going to be close. That's for sure. You know, he's probably going to get 50 in 57 games or whatever. I mean, it's funny. He had that lull around the Sweden trip, and it's like, what's going on? Because he came out of the gate so hot. And then just the last month, he's been unbelievable. I really enjoyed actually watching that game against Anaheim, where it was almost like watching Austin Matthews play against, like, an AHL level team. You know, like, they were all, every time he was on the ice, they were all over them. And he had 13, 14 shots on goal. And that game ended up being compelling, just because they were down going right into the end of the third period. And it's like, if they keep playing like this, they're going to have to break through. And do they stick with it? And do they find a way to break through? And they did. And Matthews, obviously, with the overtime winner, it was a fitting end to the how good of a game that they played. But he's fun to watch right now. And sometimes against some of the weaker teams, when he plays as well as he can, it's fun to watch, because they just don't have an answer for him.
Well, you mentioned the Sweden trip. I think what really changed, because, like, even those goals he was getting early, like, he wasn't playing great. And that line, the top line for the Leafs, wasn't really humming at all. I think what really changed is Keith pushed him to start shooting the puck, like, more. Because I think what was happening is, like, that line was, like, misfiring. Marner wasn't right. And he was passing up opportunities. And if you look, like, you mentioned that game against the Ducks, like, that's, like, the big example, where he has 20 shot attempts, 13 shots. But over the course of, like, since the start of December, he's averaging, like, 5.3 shots per game, something like that, where he's just, like, every night, he's just, like, aggressive. He's just, like, I'm the best shooter on the planet. I'm just going to keep shooting. And I think since then, he's kind of got it back. And I think what's interesting to me, James, of late is, like, him and Marner, they've got it back. Like, the connection that wasn't there at all in the start of the season, or during the start of the season, I think it's there. I think Marner is really starting to find it. Like, they're starting to look like they did last year and the year before, where they're just turning pucks over constantly in the offensive zone and creating opportunities off that. And if that is the case and they get back to what they were doing, I don't know where his season goes, because if Marner is going to be Marner, that's going to obviously help Matthews create even more. And that's what's so crazy about his season. It's like, October and November, he wasn't great. And yet we stand here, he's got 30 and 35, you know?
I wonder how the Hart Trophy feels pretty wide open right now, because McDavid hasn't, like, I mean, he still could pull way ahead, but you know what's interesting is that, like, Matthews is ahead in goals and leading the league in goals, but he's 19 points behind the leaders in points, which is Nathan McKinnon and Kucherov. Mm-hmm. Like, for December, did you see Matthews got the second star of the league. And I was like, oh, that's surprising. He got the second star. I thought he would have got first. And then you look at the December that Nathan MacKinnon had.
Yeah.
And he had like 19 assists or something and 11 goals in December. So he had like way more points than Matthews did, even though he didn't have as many goals. So, you know, Matthews only has 15 assists. You know, his line mates haven't been scoring that much. He's been, as you're saying, like a little more selfish and really just like a, he's almost going for the Cy Young again, where it's like, it's all goals and not as many assists. And I'm guessing that he'll be in the conversation for the Hart, but it might be one of those years where there's like seven guys who have a legitimate stake potentially in the Hart. And I wondered this year if there's going to be, I wonder if Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes as defensemen who have well over a point a game might be in the conversation this year.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think like you touch on the assists, like when Nylander was playing with him, it wasn't like awesome. Like and even Keith pointed out when he made the change to flip it back, he made the point that like Matthews wasn't getting a lot of his goals because of Nylander. It was more like he was just getting his goals because he was getting his goals like he does. I wonder if that starts to change a little bit, although like it's not like Marner is going to score a ton, although he has scored at a fairly like reasonable clip this year. But yeah, that's a good point. Like, I don't know. I mean, if you were going to say who is the Leafs MVP today, I don't know if I would pick Matthews or I don't know if I'd pick Nylander. I have to think about it. What would you?
I would say it's probably pretty close. I would say it's, yeah. And one of the differences for Nylander this year, he's playing a lot more minutes. Like he's playing over 20 minutes a game. It was always the ice time for the Leafs top players was always kind of like Matthews and Marner were on another level from the other guys, but Nylander's closed that gap and he's playing a lot more. The other thing that stands out to me is that you compare Matthews and Nylander to the top players in the league, they don't have the same kind of power play production as a Kucherov or MacKinnon. You know, Matthews only has 13 power play points. You know,
go ahead.
Even strength, it's like he's like way closer to the league leaders than he is overall. And it's really on the power play where, I mean, Kucherov's got 30 power play points right now.
Well, their power play as it stands today, and we're recording this on Friday, is down to eighth in the NHL at 24.6%. And I've been saying all along to you that I just don't think it looks quite as dangerous as it did in the past. So yeah, that's part of it. But like you mentioned, Nylander in the ice time, like one of the differences this year is like he is on the penalty kill. And he's not just like last year he was like, yeah, he's on the penalty kill, but it's like every three games he'll get like a shift at the end of the third power play for another team. Now he's like literally moved on to their second penalty killing unit and he is like actually prominently involved. And that like that is the minutes, right? Like he was averaging like 18 and a half before and he's up over 20. That's basically penalty kill. And so now he's like more, he's playing more of the kind of minutes that Matthews and Marner would get over the years. And I think that's a good segue into the contract stuff. I don't know how deeply we should get into it until it's actually done. But what are your thoughts on the kind of numbers that are being reported? Like Pierre LeBrun for The Athletic had a story detailing where things are at. And he said it was going to be, or it's looking like it's going to be over $11 million.
Yeah, it's basically, it sounds like it's going to be the Pasternak contract is around where it's going to be. And I'm not surprised. You know, I was having this conversation with Chris Johnston, who's been working on this story. And, you know, the Leafs are going to end up paying Nylander more than what he's accomplished in the league, to be honest. I mean, other than this year, Nylander hasn't been an $11 million player. This has really been the first year where he's established himself as like if he's going to get 11.25 like Pasternak, he's going to be one of the five highest paid players in the NHL, highest paid players in the NHL. Mm-hmm. The Leafs will go into next season potentially with four of the 10 highest paid players in the league.
Mm-hmm. So for one more year at least.
Yeah. When I did the math looking at the comparables for Nylander, I had him coming in probably around the like 10.5, 10.6 sort of range. I think that if you look at his body of work over the last 3 or 4 years, that's probably where he belongs. And you factor in the cap going up, I have a hard time getting him up over 11 based on the comparables. Like they're just, I mean, who are you comparing him to? Because if you look, Dom LeCision, our one of our analytics writers, had a chart yesterday comparing Nylander to Pasternak, and he's well behind him in any respect you want to look at.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think when we were talking about this in like the summer, we were talking between 9 and 10, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, who can know what the Nylander side was insisting on at that point? But again, this feels like another example of where not acting aggressively early sets up the conditions where he does this, you know, where he's
well, the talk.
Yeah.
The talk in the offseason, Jonas, is that they wanted more than that. Like that they weren't happy with between 9 and 10 Nylander's side. And the interesting thing is that Nylander went out and put up the kind of season that changes the conversation.
Well, and can I highlight something that was in Pierre's story? And this is a quote from J.P. Barrie, who is not Nylander's agent, but a very prominent agent and is, in fact, Pasternak's agent. He said, this is a quote, "In our situation," and this is referring to Pasternak, "my client was playing so well, it became very clear that the initial team comparables weren't appropriate anymore. He basically played himself out of that marketplace," end quote. And to me, that's exactly what feels like it's happened with Nylander, where he was in one marketplace before, and now he's moving to a different one. And I guess the question, or part of the question, is like, do you believe that this is just what he is now? Is like he going to be, I don't know, one of the 10 to 12 highest scoring players in the league? I think it's worth paying, but I understand your point of a comparable like Pasternak and some of the comparables around the league.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to get into a Jonathan Huberdeau situation. Like, it's a disaster in Calgary where Huberdeau had the one massive year with 115 points, and that's just not really what he is. And now you're paying a guy. What's Huberdeau's deal? It's 11 10. Something, 5. Right?
No, I think 10. It's 10.5.
You know, so you got Huberdeau's making huge money, and he's just not that player. You know, not that I'm saying that's what's going to happen with Nylander, but. It's, you know, the comparable we talked about a lot last year for Nylander was Philip Forsberg. And to your point and to J.P. Barrie's point, Nylander's blown that comparison out of the water. Like, that's not, if you look at their careers before Forsberg signed his last contract, comparing him to Nylander, it was very, very close.
And yeah, Forsberg, the points per game were almost exactly the same, I think.
It was very similar age. Yeah. You know, both Swedish, you know, except there was a lot of parallels there between the two. But if you drill Nylander down to his last 2 years, last year and so far what he's done this year, it changes the paradigm. And, you know, I wrote at the end of November, I wrote a piece looking at the right comparables for Nylander. And I basically said, if what he's done so far is what he is this year, if he's going to be a 50-goal, 100-point guy this year, and I mean, he's on pace for, I think, even more than that now. But if he was going to be a 50-goal, 100-point guy, that changes where he fits in. And that's where I came up with like kind of the 10.5, 10.6 number. I feel like he's kind of falls in the comparables become, you know, maybe it's like a Johnny Gaudreau, or maybe it's a Huberdeau. Who am I forgetting? You know, like just shy of like the Panarin Pasternak numbers, but higher than the guys like Forsberg that are in the 9 million ish range. And you have to factor in too that the cap's going up quite a bit. So if you're looking at this from percentage of cap, I think it makes a lot of sense for Nylander, especially with the year he's having this year coming in that 10.5 range. So how does he end up at 11.25? Well, look at the leverage that Nylander's side has here. I mean, I think that the Leafs are in a position where they need to get this done. And Nylander's had such a good season that he's given himself all the leverage. You know, like if Nylander had 30 points right now, this wouldn't be the conversation.
No, you're right. I don't think he, like, if I'm projecting ahead, do I think he's 110, 115 point player every year? No, I think he's probably more 40 goals and 90 to 105. You know what I mean? Like, he's somewhere going to be in that ballpark, but he's been getting better every year. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, his trajectory, his arrow still feels like it's pointing up. And I think the only thing I would add, and I would wonder your opinion on, and then we should take a break, is like, if I'm him in his camp, I'm looking around at the other players on the Leafs, and I'm saying, if I was talking to Brad Living, I'd say, listen, like, he's been better than Marner the last 2 years. He's been better in the playoffs than Marner. He's been better than Tavares for like 5 years and better in the playoffs than him. He's been as good ish as Matthews in the playoffs in recent years. He's not obviously the all around player that Matthews is or that Marner is, but why is my client not being paid like those guys? especially with, you know, Matthews is getting a new deal that starts next year at 13.25. Marner's going to be doing a new deal after next season. He's already at 10.9. Like, why is my client not being paid like those guys?
Well, it's 100% what they're saying. I mean, that's what they were saying in the offseason too, is that, you know, part of what happened with the last negotiation with Nylander is he was the one going first, and he didn't want to sign a contract that was going to put him way under his peers on the team. And that's what ended up happening. You know, he signed for 6 years at just under $7 million. Then the other guys go to negotiate and they're getting 11, all three of them.
You know, well, and that took the longest like contract dispute and like salary cap history just to get that. And you're right. Like, and then he became underpaid for most of the contract. Like,
yeah. So, you know, from Nylander believes he's on the level of, you know, he feels like he should be paid like Mitch Marner. So, you know, it's almost like the original sin for the Leafs was like signing those players to contracts that, and specifically Marner to it. Like Tavares was a UFA. He had bigger offers. He was getting like, you know, 13 million offers from the Islanders and from San Jose. So he's not the right comparable for Nylander. Matthews was a guy who was going to win the Hart Trophy and lead the league in goals again and again. You know, him getting 11 million, I don't think was outrageous. It's really the Marner contract. When they signed that, again, there weren't the comparables there. You look at Braden Point or Rantanen or some of these other, you know, Marner's contract should have been in the 9.5 million range. And it probably would have been if they would have gotten it done earlier than they did. And then Marner being able to get the contract that put him up at 10.9. All of a sudden, Nylander's saying, you know, that becomes his target. And that's how you get to, you know, he wants more than Marner, basically. And that's part of the negotiation now, which in another organization probably wouldn't be the case. So the Leafs have been stuck in this, you know, by acquiescing to what Marner wanted and giving him what he wanted. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to be stuck, I think, paying Nylander a little bit over his market value as a result.
I think, James, like, the original sin is not paying Matthews and Marner that summer when they signed Tavares. Like, that was, if you had locked those, and from my understanding, like, it was there, like, it was possible to do it. And obviously they had the GM change, like, right around that time from Lamoriello to Dubas. And I remember sitting down with Dubas before that season and asking, like, why is this not, like, why are you not jumping on this sooner? Because, like, these guys could come out and have great seasons, and suddenly
and they did
more, and they did, and then suddenly their value skyrocketed. So, like, waiting, that old silly saying, the Lamoriello saying of, like, if you have time, use it, has been bullshit. Like, it's backfired on them. And,
well, I think they could have got both those guys on 8-year deals,
and yes, for less
AAVs than what they ended up getting. But that's really what it ended up costing them. And then, so anyway, basically, Nylander feels like, and I don't know if like that's why he's come out this year and played the way he has, or I mean, I think he's has a bit of a chip on his shoulder where he wants to show that. I think in his mind he's like, this is bullshit. You know, I'm worth what Marner's worth, and I'm going to show everybody. And so far this year, he has.
All right, let's take a break, and then we should talk a little bit about Ilya Samsonov, the goaltending situation, and Martin Jones.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James, since we last spoke, Ilya Samsonov got hit pretty hard, obviously, in that Buffalo game you mentioned. The Columbus game, I think, was the final straw where he gives up 6. They lose in overtime. He goes on waivers. He's waived. Nobody claims him. And now he's in the minors. And the plan is, like, I don't know what to make of the plan. Like, basically, they said they're going to use this week as a bit of a reset for Samsonov, but he's not going to practice with the Marlies. He's not going to play with the Marlies. And then they're going to reevaluate. I don't see how he doesn't play games down there. I don't know how you, I mean, the only thing I guess that could change is an injury that requires him to come back up. But what do you make of their approach, putting him on waivers, and then just this?
I think it had to happen. I think they had to put him on waivers. I mean, I think that the question is, like, does he get another chance with the Leafs or not? You know, is there a world where maybe they were thinking, Jonas, like, they've got San Jose here on the Tuesday coming back home. Maybe they were thinking, like, this is the worst team in the league. They've lost 10 in a row. If they come back from the trip and they've won three straight, maybe they want to give that San Jose game to Samsonov and see if there's anything.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I just, it feels like with the way they've done this, the door isn't 100% closed on Samsonov, is my read of what they're doing.
Yeah, so I wrote right after he went on waivers, and I just wrote right away, and my thought was, like, his Leaf career is done. And I regret that, because the more I thought about it that afternoon, I was like, there are a lot of scenarios where he comes back up. But I do think it's important to stress what waivers means. Like, they're basically saying to the league, you can have him. Like, that, or we are okay if you want to take him. Like, we are okay losing him. And now, obviously, his contract and the way he's played made it unlikely that someone was going to claim him. But they were basically saying, like, he can be gone and we're okay with it. That's what happens when you put someone on waivers. It's just like, James, like, even that San Jose game that you're mentioning coming up next week, like, what's to make you think, if you're the Leafs, that anything is going to be different? Like, why all of a sudden, just not being around the team for a week, is he suddenly going to get his confidence back? And yet, like, you look at what happened with Jack Campbell in Edmonton and their minors in the minor leagues there in the AHL, he hasn't played well and he's just down there, and, like, who knows what's going to happen. He has a long contract. Samsonov is a free agent after this year. Martin Jones has played well. I mean, the sticky thing is, like, Joseph Woll, it doesn't seem like he's coming back before the All-Star break. There's a bunch of games before then. How many games can you play Martin Jones? How many games do you want to play Dennis Hill to be? Like, would you rather just play Samsonov instead? I don't know.
Well, you can tell they're really nervous about rushing Hildeby, you know, who's only played like 40 some games in pro hockey, period. Like, he's so young and kind of a late bloomer that he didn't really play in Sweden's top pro league much at all. Mm-hmm. Really just as, like, kind of an injury fill in, you know, not used a lot backup. So Hildeby's still, you know, even when I think they picked him in the fourth round, even then it was kind of like, I believe he was an older guy. Like, he had passed through the draft a couple of times. Like, Hildeby, they believe Hildeby's still a project for them to work on. So that's where the reluctance of them, you know, and they played Martin Jones back to back. I mean, the other thing that they could do is they could give Hildeby one of the San Jose games and just feel like, hey, here's a team where this is going to be the easiest scenario to break him in. What's looming, though, Jonas, is there's another back-to-back coming next week. I know Detroit's the second game. I can't remember who's the first game in the games next week. They've got a back-to-back, and it's not super easy teams. I mean, Detroit's got some firepower. They've scored quite a few goals this year.
It's Colorado.
Yeah, so Colorado, Detroit, back-to-back. Maybe they're hoping that they can put Samsonov in one of those games. I don't know. But clearly, the organization doesn't feel inclined to rush Hildeby. The other thing they could be trying to do is buy themselves some time to see if they can find another goalie to bring in as a stopgap option. It's been interesting around the league. There's been a bunch of scenarios where, you mentioned Jack Campbell, but Antti Raanta cleared waivers. Eric Comrie's been through waivers. There's been a bunch of goalies that have just been lit up and put up 870, 860 save percentages that have been in the league for a long time and have cleared through waivers. And goaltending, the new normal has been that it's been very unpredictable, very volatile. And some guys are really just having a hard time with the way the league is. I mean, save percentages in the NHL now are the lowest that they've been in 20 odd years. And I don't know. I don't know what they're like. Would you give Samsonov another chance, or do you think that he's just too far gone?
To me, the final straw was that Columbus game. Like, I wrote after that game that they can't play him anymore, and that's kind of how I still feel. Like, I don't think it's fair to his teammates to put him in the net. Like, how can you play in front of someone who's struggling so much? Like, I feel for him because, like, you can see and you can hear and, you know, you can watch how he's playing. Like, he's going through it. And I just don't know how you sort that out in the NHL and still be fair to the coaches, still be fair to the players. It just doesn't feel fair to me. I want to come back to the other goalies, but I want to stick on Hildeby for a sec, some of the stuff that you mentioned. I guess I just don't really totally see, I get the reluctance, but what is playing him one game going to, like, is it going to destroy him? Like, even if he gets, I guess the only thing was what Sheldon Keefe said about the team and how they've played, and they've not played particularly well. And like, their standing isn't amazing. Like, you want to make sure you get points. That would be my only reluctance of playing Hildeby, is like, you potentially throw away getting 2 points against San Jose. But I mean, it's not like you're throwing in a minor or like a, I don't know. You're not throwing in like a rec league goalie. Like, he's still, you know what I mean? Like, what's the, can you not win a game against a team that's lost 10 in a row with him? I don't know.
Well, I could see Hildeby playing on Saturday against San Jose, or potentially in the home game next week against San Jose. I mean, maybe that's the easiest possible start to give it to him, but
yeah.
The problem is you've got that back-to-back coming on the weekend, so
yeah.
I guess you could play Hildeby on the Tuesday game and then Martin Jones gets the back-to-back. I don't know.
It's just like,
I
mean, James, like, I've seen, like, remember, like, Eric, is he worse than Eric Schallgren? Like, I know Schallgren was older, more experience. Like, when they brought Joe Wall up initially, like, he hadn't played a bunch. He hadn't been amazing in the minors. He was, again, like, a little bit older than Hildeby is. Like, I don't know. Like, what's like, is it going to destroy his career? I have a hard time believing that if he's actually a legitimate prospect. Are there any of the goalies that are conceivably out there that you think makes sense for them to go and acquire? Because, like, the Samsonov thing, you have to assume if you're the Leafs that this going away, like, you can't assume you're going to get a good goalie back. Is there anybody you feel like you trust more than Martin Jones and or Wall?
Well, I mean, I think at this point with how well Martin Jones has played, I think you feel okay giving him more of a chance. Now, Jones has a track record of the last 5 years of being underwhelming, and that's the reason why he cleared waivers coming out of training camp, is that other teams have seen the Martin Jones show, but you can't argue with what he's accomplished so far for the Leafs. I mean, what's he got? He's got like a 930 save percentage or something like that. Like, he's done everything they could have hoped for as a number three goalie. That's the other thing I wanted to talk to you about too, Jonas, is like, I don't really criticize the front office for what they've done with the goaltending situation. Like, we've been critical of their offseason and Klingberg and some of the things that they've done. I think what they did with the goaltending was right. I think you give, you know, Samsonov had a good year last year. You pay him, you do a 1 year deal. You tell him to prove it to us again. I think that made sense. Mm-hmm. Joseph Woll played well in the playoffs. You want to give him an opportunity. He's making a low salary. I think that made sense to make him the number two. And you find a good number three, a veteran number three, Martin Jones, who can come in if everything goes to hell the way that it has. I think that they did everything right. It's just that who could have predicted that Samsonov was going to be one of the worst goalies in the NHL? I mean, that was not something that they could have foreseen. And who could have predicted that Joseph Woll would have a major injury when he did?
I mean, I think you're right. I don't think you can criticize them. I do take a little bit of, like, I don't totally agree with you about Samsonov. Like, but other than last year, this is, and I mean, I guess you could say his rookie year, he's been that, like, he's not been this bad, but like, it's not like, like, Washington basically just was like, thanks, see you later, because this has happened to them.
But what's the criticism, Jonas?
Like, no, there's no criticism
away, like, from him. Like,
no, like, I guess I just went into the season and I wrote this, and I believe I said this on the podcast, like, I didn't think that their goaltending was any more certain a thing than it was the year before when they had Matt Murray coming off whatever he was coming off in Ottawa, and Samsonov coming off a bad year in Washington. Like, it felt just as uncertain. What's good for them is Woll popped, and then obviously Samsonov popped in the wrong way. But yeah, like, I don't think you can criticize them. I guess I just wonder, is there anything you can do to make it better now? Or do you just look at some of these guys out there? Like, I went through every possibility I could see, and like, a lot of them, it's like, is this guy any better than Jones? No.
That's what you were asking about, like Jake Allen and some of these.
Yeah, it's like, is Jake Allen better than Jones? I don't know.
I wouldn't want to give up. He's probably a little bit better, but he's also making 3.85 something for another year after this one. So it's like, is he that much better than Jones and Woll? Probably not. Not that you give up an asset and you dedicate that kind of cap space too. So I think that what happens here is they need Wohl to come back. They need to see what his health is like and how he plays. And if he struggles or Jones, I mean, right now, if the playoffs started, we're starting in a month, their goalies would be Wohl and Jones going into the playoffs. And how comfortable you feel with that be in a contending season, I think you need to see how Wohl and Jones play over a longer stretch of time here.
I think you hit on an important point that is easily overlooked with Wohl. Like, he's coming off like a pretty difficult injury, or will be coming off a pretty difficult injury, a high ankle sprain for a goalie. He's like barely played in the league. You kind of need to see like what he comes back looking like. If he's the same goalie he was before, you might just look at everything that's around available and be like, these guys aren't any better. We'll just have to roll with Wohl and Jones. And like, they could look to Vegas last year and Nathan Hill and just be like, maybe that can be us. But if Wohl comes back and is like, or he gets hurt, like, suddenly you're going to have to more seriously look at some of those guys like Allen or whoever. It's just like the guys out there are just not amazing, unless like you're going to try to trade for like Markstrom or someone like that.
I don't see that happening. But what I would be doing right now is, if anyone goes on waivers who's like just okay, I would claim them. You know, there's a lot of teams carrying three goalies.
Yeah, I mean, like, James, like you mentioned Comrie. If Comrie wasn't making 1.8, I bet they would have claimed him, no?
Well,
I know he hasn't had a great season, but like,
his numbers are just as bad as Samsonov. I mean,
like, yeah, so but he played seven games. Like, I don't know. You'd rather play him in like that back to back than Hill to be, like, you know what I mean?
I mean, they could have called Buffalo and said, hey, will you retain half of Comrie and we'll just give him a shot as our guy? And then, like, if it doesn't work, then you just put him on waivers and it doesn't hurt your cap. And I think that they could have looked at that. And probably if Comrie's numbers were a little bit better, they might have looked at that closer.
Yeah. I mean, Buffalo has three goalies. It's interesting. Yeah. Like, I mean, the Jones thing is, it's been a good story for them, and he's been a good story for them. Like, obviously he played a bunch in Seattle last year. He didn't play amazing, but he won a lot of games for them. And I mean, that counts for something. And like, he is like, I don't know, like, we talked in the summer about bringing him in. Like, he is kind of like your perfect number three. Like, you remember over the years, the number three guys that they counted on, it was like, he's way better than Michael Hutchinson, who was their number three forever. And
it's hard to have a good number three in the NHL because they got to go through waivers. Like, if you go, I think it's super interesting this year that there's five teams carrying three goalies. And I think this is going to be the future. I think teams are going to have three goalies more frequently, just because you don't want to lose guys through waivers and because you have injuries and you have underperformance.
Yeah. I guess if it's the choice, James, between having like an eighth defenseman or having a third goalie, you'd rather have the third goalie.
I think it makes a ton of sense, especially if you have a young guy like Devon Levi in Buffalo. You know, Detroit wasn't sure about their guys and they wanted Alex Lyon to get a chance, and he's been their best goalie, even though Ville Husso's got the big contract. It's been really, really interesting. And there's so much, the word I used earlier, I go back to again, there's so much volatility with goaltending right now, is that you could enter the year with three guys, think that they're ranked 1, 2, 3, and it could be completely backwards by the end of the year. And that's where the Leafs are at right now, where we came into the year thinking it was Samsonov 1, Wohl 2, Jones 3. And right now it's Wohl 1, Jones 2, Samsonov, I don't know, 4 or 5, you know, like, so
yeah,
I think leaving that extra 800, 900 grand of cap space for a third goalie makes a ton of sense. And I think we're going to see it more and more around the league.
Last thing before we go that we should mention is, defensively, some of the games that they've played recently, I think, have been among their better games of the season. And that has taken a bit of the pressure off Jones, I think. Like, they didn't give up almost anything in LA. Same with the Carolina game. Like, they've just kind of buckled down and found another gear defensively. So I think that is worth pointing out.
Well, and there was some urgency, I think, going into those games, because they fell at one point to 1-4 and 1-6, and they weren't playing well and they were losing games and they gave up all those goals. Like, the Buffalo game was embarrassing and terrible. And then, you know, this last stretch of, I guess, probably four games. These three or four games have been some of their best of the year, and the results haven't always been there, but I thought the Anaheim game was really encouraging, where they found a way to stick with it and break through after dominating. And it'd be an interesting test for them, that these two games against San Jose, like, they should easily win both of these games. So we'll see which Leafs team shows up here.
Get a new subscription for The Athletic for $2 a month for 12 months when you go to theathletic.com/leafreport. Also, be sure to subscribe to The Athletic's YouTube channel at youtube.com/@TheAthleticHockeyShow. I think we'll be back next Wednesday, James. The Leafs will play the Islanders on the Thursday, so we'll probably record on the Wednesday. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year. Thanks for listening, everyone.